Beach easy.
But I remember sitting, we were praying for some people to be healed, and I had my head down on this dirty old bench in West Africa, and my eyes like popped open to see my mom trying to kill me when I was a baby. And here I am like, what's my purpose? Who am I? And I had this vision, and I said, ooh, I've been badly wounded. It's a miracle I'm alive.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. From personal growth and self-discovery to challenges and victories, we discuss it all. Join us as we dive into the extraordinary stories of ordinary people all the way to the end.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. I'm Julie Ellis, and today I'm joined by Layla Grace, a burnout prevention specialist who's had her own experience when it comes to healing from toxicity and burnout. Her story is complex, ranging from a traumatic childhood to career and relationship issues and even an eating disorder, all culminating in a life-threatening health crisis that forced her to step back and evaluate what she needed to do to heal from the trauma that she had endured. In order to understand why her life played out as it did, we need to start from the beginning. As a child, she grew up with a family who didn't exactly set her up for success.
In that family of origin, my original house of pain, I like to call it, as the third of nine children, so we were a pretty big dysfunctional family at best. I was always kind of stuck trying to figure out my identity. So I had a couple olders that I would try to, you know, see what they were doing or mimic what they were doing to survive.
Girls or boys?
I had two older sisters.
Sisters, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I had five younger sisters and one brother. As I was growing up, right, around the age 10 or 11, I was quickly introduced to mothering. A two-week-old baby was installed in my bedroom with a crib, and I had to get up and feed her and or him, whenever that was. But it was a couple of my sisters and my brother for a short time. So you picture 10 or 11-year-old girl wow. having to get up to go to school the next day. I was in school at that point after a few years homeschool, which was more of a fantasy than an actual reality. But yeah, so I mothered probably at the age of 10 or 11, you know, feeding my siblings, changing them, putting them back to bed.
Do you recall your attitude about that at that time, at the age? Were you resentful or were you just like, whatever?
That's a good question. My attitude was willing. I was willing. I wanted to step up. I don't know if it's the nurturer that's kind of right. in my DNA as a female, but I was willing. I just wanted to see my little sibling be well and yeah. cared for, because I think my mom kind of started to check out around that time.
Describe your mom to me, please.
She was kind of like a queen manipulator. If you've ever seen the movie Alice in Wonderland, the queen is like, oh, Alice, come and do this, have some tea. And then, you know, a couple seconds later, off with her head, you know, these shifting kind of personality types. That would be one way to describe her. One thing I think, too, is that I'm not sure she had the capacity to be honest
right.
with herself
yeah.
or with another human being. Like, I don't ever remember integrity being instilled in my mom.
Yeah.
Like, it would be, say one thing, do something else. Do what I say, not what I do. You know, like, it was such a cluster of confusion for children.
Layla had a complicated relationship with her mother, but her father was also a present figure in the household.
I really love my dad.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. I think so. I Google him every now and then to see yeah. if he's still alive. He was kind of lighthearted. I feel like I get my kind of lighthearted, playful side from my dad.
Yeah.
He spoke with music.
Oh.
He was like a DJ maybe before he had kids and family.
Like what kind of DJ? On the radio or like at a party?
Good question.
Spinning records.
Spinning records.
Yeah.
So he worked at a club and spun records in the 70s.
What did he do for a living?
He worked for Chrysler. So he was, worked on the line, you know, for a car manufacturer and did some other things around the plant.
How did you see their relationship when you were a child?
I think they kind of functioned like paralleling or like autonomous from each other, not in a positive light. Like my dad was always kind of off doing his thing and she was always doing her thing. It was rare for us as children to really see them bonding or, you know, having any type of partnership type.
Right.
Every now and then there might have been a public display of affection, like a hug or an arm around.
Yeah.
But it was very disjointed.
Layla's parents were at the core of the dysfunction her family lived in. Her mom's manipulation and lack of connection between her parents created an environment where physical abuse was all too common.
Physical abuse was a chronic thing. I can't remember in my like mind's eye how frequent they were, but they felt like they were often, where we would have family just all out brawls, you know, punching and clawing and hair
like all the kids and the parents,
and
like everybody?
Oh, everybody.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, it would start with probably a couple, you know, and there was a lot of weird physical abuse where my mom would conjure up like something happened, maybe a vase got broken, I don't know, for example. I don't remember what the thing was.
Mm-hmm.
And she would fire my father up so much, and he would line us up and just beat each one of us without knowing who really done it. You know, still don't know who done it. It was probably her.
Yeah.
And just manufacture these just violent, you know, things being broken over my behind, bloody and welted and bruised by 2x4s. Or I think one of the most painful things that I walked in on was my oldest sister in the basement at the time, if you've lived up north where we have basements, right? And she had a black pipe, like a gas line. I can't remember if it's cast iron or wrought iron. I don't know. Iron pipe.
Pipe.
And hit my sister in the face with it. And I saw her, you know, just below the nose to the lip, just completely gouged open because she wouldn't do what my mom wanted, and just gushing with blood. And I walked in on it and was like, don't you say anything or you're going to be next. And I wanted to call 911. And my dad was there watching the whole thing too. So, so screwed up.
Despite the abuse, Layla grew up and went to college to study architecture. It was during her young adulthood that she realized she needed to make a choice about her relationship with her family.
I love college students. Like, and I love that age of individuation, you know, where you become like very, do I want to believe this? Or at least that was my experience. But while I was finishing college, I had this like burning question of like, God, why did you make me? What's my purpose in life? You know, and I don't know if that's typical for college students, but I think we're all trying to find our path. Like, where do I want to go? You know, who was I designed to be? And I just remember for those last couple years of my college life, I was like begging God to show me, you know, which path do I go down so I don't screw it up? There's so many options. I took a little break, and this is where I started the self-discovery process.
Okay.
I was an intern. I was studying to find my purpose in the more of the light side. So it was a spiritual based internship with a lot of reading and a lot of how do people heal from the inside out. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just like reading books and going to classes and learning about the Bible and faith and the origin of Christianity and the God of the Bible, the God of love, right? Just that kind of niche of faith. Meanwhile, being super encouraged to have my own experience.
Yeah.
I was in West Africa, had taken a long flight, a boat ride. We're in the middle of nowhere. And I was following this group of people that wanted to help heal people in Africa. And a girlfriend of mine wanted to go live there as a missionary. And I was like, sure, I'll help. I like helping people, you know, and meanwhile, I'm trying to connect with my own purpose. Who was I made to be? What's my call? And in Africa, if you've ever had a chance to travel overseas,
not yet,
the spiritual realm is almost tangible. And maybe that was just me, I don't know. But I remember sitting, we were praying for some people to be healed. And I had my head down on this dirty old bench in West Africa. And my eyes like popped open to see my mom trying to kill me when I was a baby. And here I am like, what's my purpose? Who am I? And I had this vision. And I said, ooh, I've been badly wounded.
Wow.
It's a miracle I'm alive. And I also had a lot of, I don't know what you call it, not pity. I just felt bad for my mom that she had made some choices to harm people. I used to have dreams that that I would be out in a boat and she would come and try to drown me.
As a child, you had those dreams?
I was probably a young adult.
Oh, wow.
That she would come after me and try to kill me and push me down and keep my head underwater.
Wow.
And so I would get help from like spiritual leaders and be like, what does this mean? And they're like, yeah, we've been trying to tell you, like, your mom's not safe. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't think she likes me, you know, trying to heal. There were other times where she would orchestrate when she wasn't getting her way, kind of that ego was like, I need to have my way as queen of this house or whatever, where she told me this whole thing about how my dad had committed suicide just to try to get me to come home for like a Thanksgiving gathering.
And when you were in college?
When I was in college, right? She told me this whole story. I'm like crushed and just weeping, and then calls me back later. This is when we had landlines, you know, I'm not even sure if I had a cell phone. And was like, oh, wow, that's not really true. Your dad's still alive.
How evil can you be to do that
so
to your
screwed
child?
Up.
Layla hit a breaking point in her relationship with her mom, and she knew she needed space from her family. She contemplated her decision for a long time before finally making a choice that would change her life.
I kept hearing the same thing for 2 years straight. Every time I'd have like one of those little breath prayers, like, why'd you make me? Who am I? And I would hear, divorce your family, leave your family. And I thought, well, I don't know. Would God really say that to somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And I would dream about it. I would dream about breaking ties with my family of origin. And I thought, is that me? And so I just got this revelation or understanding that I would cut ties with them. So I had a frank conversation with my mother and father, and I said, hey, I don't know if it's for forever or if it's for right now, but I need some space, and I would appreciate you just honoring my decision to just take care of myself right now. I changed my phone number. I had to change my phone number several times.
Well, how did they take that?
My dad kind of understood, and he was kind of like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm gay and still am. Your mom always knew. You know, he just like, I'm going to use this as my chance to come clean.
Yeah.
Just wanted to tell you.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, oh, thanks, Dad.
Were you surprised to hear that?
A little bit. At first, I was a little surprised, but then it gave clarity to some of the things I witnessed, some of the deception, some of the lying, sneaking around.
Yeah. Well, what about your siblings?
I wasn't really part of that,
though. You close to any of your siblings?
I love that question. I really desperately tried to stay connected to my siblings.
Yeah.
When I tried to stay connected to my siblings, I would hear her toxic poison through their words. My mom was still meddling sideways through them.
Yeah.
They didn't even know how to cut themselves off. So I would try to stay connected, but all I would hear is her poison.
Yeah.
And her trying to make them puppets.
Yeah.
So my dad honored it with his last jolt of information.
About himself.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Appreciate it. He never like messed with me. My mom would stalk me, harass me, leave really weird, gross, like creepy messages, and would attack me often in my dreams. Like it's a spiritual thing. She would come after me physically, and I ended up moving and just relocating.
Wait, she came after you physically, not just in dreams.
Right, not just in dreams.
Over time, Layla completely cut contact with her family. With that chapter of her life closed, she launched into her career, but new challenges began to arise.
So I went into commercial architecture and construction. I always loved math. I wanted to teach math. I ended up kind of doing a combination of art and math, which is great.
Yeah.
So anybody that's a lefty that kind of operates in both sides of their brain,
yeah.
I'm like mathy and arty. I have like an engineer, architect brain. My first career that I got, or first job, I was there for maybe just shy of 5 years, and I thought I would stay there forever. They ended up doing a bunch of changes in the company and letting like a whole bunch of people go in one foul swoop with a nice severance package. And it was like, ugh, a little chaotic, right? But I'm used to chaos. So I'm like, okay, I can rebound from this, mm-hmm. you know? And I was starting to come into my own person. I had started to detox from these toxic people, you know, my family of origin. I was still searching. I was learning the profession. I was learning what it took. Just a lot of deadlines. So I'd get that spike, that hit of adrenaline from the deadlines. It was, got to get this done. You know, I like the thrill of the deadline.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I totally felt fulfilled.
Right.
Yeah. I was always longing. I always was curious or wanted that hole in my soul filled. I didn't realize that I was the one that could fill it.
Layla reached a point of stagnation in her career and began searching for other ways to feel fulfilled. Little did she know she was looking in the wrong places and had no idea how much pain her choices would bring.
One of the things that I thought would fulfill me at that time that added to the fight or flight that really should have killed me, I think, was I started having like innocent lunch dates with one of the guys that we contracted with on one of the projects I was at,
mm-hmm.
kind of friendly, who was married in a committed relationship with children. And I didn't really think much of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of textbook, like progressed into a secret false sense of fulfillment,
mm-hmm.
where it was, oh, no one that's ever listened to me like you, my wife.
Oh, yeah.
And I started taking on information that was not mine to hear.
Right.
That was meant for her ears. And I just didn't have a skill set to not allow that.
Right.
I just didn't know what I was getting into. It was like, oh, I heard you're really
good. I'm just being a good friend at lunch.
Like, I heard you're really good with helping people. Could you help me talk through this? And I was like, oh, sure. You know, I was flattered by the invitation.
Yeah.
And then ended up chatting at night, you know, online. Oh, wow, this is intriguing.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, whoa, maybe he's not like all the other guys that just, you know, want to hook up. And he just really just wants to get to know me, you know, and my brain kind of like played tricks on me. You know, it was just really, it was just intoxicating, like subtly. And I think that fantasy that I was medicating with as a child, you know, I had fantasies about men that could care for me or, you know, rescue me from the insanity.
Yeah.
And it kind of played on that because it was not real. It was fantasy.
But that was adding stress to you at that
absolutely. Time. I think the secrecy, you know, at the time I was part of this like church and I'm like kind of sneaking around with this colleague.
Yeah.
You know, eventually it evolved or devolved into, you know, hooking up and where I was a full-blown mistress. And it was really embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, when I decided that I wanted to heal very deeply and wanted to get my life back together, we had to disband that and really, or we made a decision to, you know, say this, we're not.
Had it been found out?
It did.
By the wife. And
at some point, she had sniffed something out and had gotten my phone number and called me and said, would you leave my husband alone?
Oh, okay.
Well, and I just apologized to her. I was like, I am so sorry. I was like, and at that point, I don't think that it had really gone too far. So that happened. But then when I was hospitalized in critical care for my heart stopping in the ICU, he came to see me.
Were you still with him then, or had you?
I was still sort of ish with him.
Yeah.
And then people came to visit me from my church, and he was there, you know, very intimately, like laying on the bed kind of with me.
Oh.
And that, what it like blew up the whole thing. And then on top of it, because I'm just a glutton for punishment, I guess, was heartbreak.
Yeah.
We decided to part ways and never talk again. We cut all communication.
Yeah. How long had you been with him? Or
I think that's a good question. Maybe 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Long time.
It was pretty complex. And because he said, you know, to give you a chance to actually survive this, I think we need to stop the secrecy.
The stress from the unresolved childhood trauma, a lackluster career, an affair, and an eating disorder that Layla had been battling since childhood became more than her body could handle. She experienced both a mental and physical crash that left her reeling and searching for ways to heal from everything that was causing her pain.
I heard people say you gotta listen to your body. I just ignored all my bodily signals. I was staying up late at night. I was burning till about 2 a.m. and I thought it was early if you went to bed at midnight, and then I'd get up at 6 or 7 and just go again.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Or, you know, I just pacified. I just ignored, hey, I'm not really feeling well, or maybe this isn't healthy. Maybe, you know, people are saying this is a healthy time to go to sleep. Why don't you try that? I was like, I don't need that. I think I had this undercurrent of I wanted to change the world somehow. And I would
probably a little bit of you have something to prove. To
yeah, just, absolutely. Yeah. Just watch me. I'll be fine. Or I got this kind of Miss Independent BS.
Yeah.
And then one day I woke up and I couldn't get out of bed. And I just was blacking out. After work, my heart, I mean, it turns out my heart was pausing, but I think a lot of that was just buried trauma.
Well, describe what then physically happened to you. You said you couldn't wake up you couldn't get up one morning. So your muscles, your organs, what broke down?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that we'll ever have a true light on exactly what happened. Because it was months and months of testing and blood and urine and saliva and hair testing and, you know, all the scans. And I was under such chronic fatigue that I couldn't stand for more than 20 minutes without, like, just falling over. Like, I'd physiologically just fall over. I couldn't drive for months and months and months. People from my church community just brought food over. I'd pay them to go grocery shop for me.
Oh, wow.
Took leave of a couple different short-term disability leave of absence to try to heal. But it was painful because they didn't know. And it's not like I could really say like, you know, it was never anything I ever would have imagined that I would have just signed up for willingly. Like, oh, yeah, let me be that.
Layla's health crisis launched her into a healing journey that was more profound than anything she had experienced before. All the pain and trauma she'd carried throughout her life came to the surface, and she found herself forced to leave behind her past so she could build a future on a clean slate.
I think that we're in a culture right now where, because of smartphones and technology and information being at our fingertips, I know in my journey, I thought I needed to figure it out on my own, where that's not exactly how people heal. We heal in connection, right?
Yes.
We heal in story. We heal with support by loving people that actually have healthy boundaries. But I think there's like this, a couple lies out there of figure it out, read about it. You know, heal yourself. Well, okay, some people can do that. Awesome. But in a healing from that type of level of trauma, we truly need connection and safety above all else to be in an environment where we can heal. When I was kind of like literally pulling myself off the ground, like drooling at myself, you know, trying to like get up from my deathbed.
Yeah.
I had to become 100% willing to look at myself wholeheartedly, not just parts of myself, not just certain little closets in the house. I had to be willing to gut the whole house, rip out the sheetrock, and see what was going on behind those walls. And that meant going really deeper with, was there any parts of my mom in me? Did I ever manipulate anyone? Did I ever use anyone? Did I, you know, and really like get rid of all negativity and make myself available to let God heal me. Because I had to admit there's parts of her in me.
Right.
There are parts of my dad in me.
Yeah.
And I had to just like draw a line in the sand and say, I'm responsible for me. I am responsible for my choices. And today I'm not going to manipulate. I'm not going to participate in that. I have no interest.
Right.
And dear God, please forgive me for any type of using people that I've ever done in my entire life. Have mercy on me. And if you let me live, use my story to help heal other people. I don't know if you were like this, but I needed somebody to give me permission. I think that's part of my call, is to give people permission to heal, because we can't heal in the same environment that made us sick.
Exactly.
And I'll probably go down, you know, dying, preaching that message.
And as you're starting to heal, at what point did you decide to move to Myrtle Beach?
Oh, when I decided to move to Myrtle Beach was part of that healing journey. So when I got serious about I have nowhere else to go except for healing this, I started researching who could actually help me process some of this, because I had no idea how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I found a place in Nashville, Tennessee called Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
So they do like 4-day clinical intensive workshops. So it's not like outpatient, it's not like rehab, but they promise to help process childhood trauma in 4 days that would equal about a year's worth of therapy.
Wow.
And I was like, let's expedite this.
Yeah,
let's go, right?
That's the doer in you.
Yeah,
just like,
I was
okay.
Like, okay, are you sure about this? I was like, by the way, and I had to document like that I had these adrenal crises and I had a heart condition. I had brain stuff. Like, I mean, like they had a protocol for if I got like my emotions got too high, I was going to like black out, right?
Yeah.
So whatever came to me scheduling this trip to Nashville, friends of mine in Myrtle Beach were like, hey, if you need some respite before, instead of just going back to life as I knew it, they said, how, why don't you come down to Myrtle Beach? I'll give you a free week stay in Myrtle Beach and you can just kind of come up for air. We'll leave you alone. We'll feed you and give you your own space so you can just process whatever you need to process.
Oh, wow.
I'm like,
nice.
Okay, I'm in. So I ended up taking a month off from my life. I took a leave of absence from architecture because I was already, I mean, like I was still, I ended up going back to work for a little bit before I moved down here. Anyway, just long story short, when I was down here, I heard the voice. I heard that still small voice say, you'll live here one day, driving through Murrells Inlet. And I was like, I know I'm going through some mind stuff and I'm trying to heal, you know, like, am I crazy? And then for a couple weeks, I just processed like, you'll live here one day. And I was like, okay. And I was like, how is this going to play out? When I flew back a month, so I ended up staying down here. I got a little ocean front. It was November, so I think they had a little bit better rates.
Yeah.
And I just cried. I just mourned my entire life as I knew it.
Yeah.
I took out.
You have to.
I had some face piercings. I had long black hair. I was 2-something, you know, pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And I just mourned my life as I knew it. I looked at the ocean and I wept. And I gave up every idea I thought I had about myself, every dream I thought I was supposed to be. And I said, God, you take it all. I can never go back to who I was. I can't. I couldn't look back. I got home to Syracuse. My friend picked me up. He looks at me, he says, "You moving to Myrtle Beach?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think I am."
Layla has come a long way from where she started. After coming to terms with her past and accepting the future that God has in store for her, she's eager to share what she's learned with others. She wrote a book and started a company called Grace Revealed with a mission to help people heal from emotional trauma.
Tell me about the book. What is it called?
So the book is Relapse No More, The Way Out, and it's a guide to emotional sobriety and breaking self-destructive patterns.
Awesome.
You know, it's funny. Relapse, I think everybody has a different picture that comes up when they hear that word, right?
Yeah.
Some people think drugs and alcohol, but really it's just going backwards to something that once harmed you, or just going back, right?
Oh, yeah, I've done it. I've done it, yeah.
And the guide to emotional sobriety is a sobriety that I don't hear about very often.
Right.
And I learned about emotional sobriety on my healing journey when I was ready to let go of the pain of the past.
Yeah.
So I remember hearing, I was going to recovery rooms because I really felt like people needed to hear hope. I had walked out this journey and I had this steady peace of mind. And I just wanted to tell everybody about emotional sobriety. I was like,
yeah,
this stuff is so good. Like, come get it. Do the work. It's worth it. Like,
yeah,
there's an end. It's not like this endless journey of like self-discovery and healing and go through, unpack it all.
Right.
You know, there's an end to it. And then you can blossom. I think you said plant yourself and move forward. You know,
right.
There's like such a evolution of who we are meant to be once we face that stuff.
Yeah.
I love empowering people with tools that they can activate like today.
Right.
Like practical things that they can actually do to improve their lives in either that moment or later on in that day, that is not some fanciful thought or, you know, you have to eat better and move more, you know.
Right.
That we all know.
And everybody
better
knows that.
But to give people enough safety where they can actually let their guard down a little bit and be seen and heard inside of a group dynamic of maybe people that they're already in close proximity to, and just speaking to groups that really have an emphasis on wanting to be well.
I always ask, because it's Life's a Beach and Then You Die, meaning like, you know, it's your journey in
sure,
this lifetime.
Yeah.
So as you continue on, what are your goals for your remaining lifetime on this planet as human? Mm. And, you know, kind of legacy do you want to leave behind?
I would love to have the opportunity to speak cross-culturally around other countries in Europe.
Yeah.
And other English-speaking countries, or maybe even in French. The goal for Grace Revealed is to offer a safe haven for people to come and heal.
Yeah.
So the goal is to design a respite center called The Well, where people can come and drink refreshment, which will be like a digital detox center.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll come and be disconnected from technology,
mm-hmm,
and have really like calm, serene rooms. We have some plans already beginning. Thank you, Old Life and Architecture.
Yeah.
To build a respite center, especially for high ticket, maybe famous people that are having some kind of mental breakdown, that don't want the stigma of I'm going crazy. No, you're not going crazy. You have pain that needs to come out.
Yeah.
Give them a place to process that.
Yeah.
Maybe have like a land and maybe some animal component to it, where they just get to like detox digitally, but also get the training and like a birthplace for resilience.
Yeah.
So that is
beautiful.
Like my legacy that I would like to leave on this planet and be known as the forerunner of overcoming trauma and giving people tools that they can really heal deeply and quickly, way less complicated than maybe they're thinking when they're stuck in the pain or the hardship. So I want to be known for, she made this simple,
yeah,
and practical for me to heal and regain my new identity, that transformation cocoon of the place to get ugly, cry ugly, yep. let the pain out. That when people are near me and with me and they think back at who Layla Grace was, they felt safe with me, they felt seen and heard, and that shame fell off them when yes. we were together.
Layla's story teaches us that no matter how many challenges we face, there's always a way to find peace and healing. Her journey, while not easy, shows that true healing is possible if you put in the work.
If you've been inspired by this story or any others, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review.
We don't just get away at the beach, we get together. Because no matter what floats your boat, we're floating right along with you. With over 2,000 restaurants, live music all day and night, and endless attractions, Myrtle Beach was made for having fun and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 miles where you belong, the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.